as a death toll from Jeev's campaign of genocide in Gaza nears 33,500. The Iranian president says Israel's killing Hamas chief's sons and grandchildren proves regime's disregard for all human and moral principles. And a new report says Israeli forces have abducted more than 8,000 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank since the regime started its onslaught on Gaza back in early October. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here on World News. Now, Gaza's Israeli regime continues with its deadly attacks, killing more innocent women and children. In latest developments, Israeli airstrikes targeted a civilian vehicle in the Ashati refugee camp in northern Gaza, killing several Palestinians. Three sons of the Hamas political bureau chief, Ismail Haniyeh, and some of his grandchildren were also among those killed. Israeli airstrikes also struck the Al-Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. The Palestinian Health Ministry says 122 civilians are killed and 56 injured in a matter of 24 hours since the start of the U.S. and Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Nearly 33,500 Palestinians have been killed, among them 14,500 children and over 9,500 women. The Hamas political bureau chief has reacted to the killing of his sons and grandchildren in an Israeli airstrike. Ismail Haniyeh says that their blood will boost Palestinian resolve and commitment to the freedom of Palestine. Haniyeh said his sons remain in Gaza with other Palestinians amid Israeli bombardment because their lives were no more valuable than other Gazans. Haniyeh stressed that Palestinian leaders will not back down on their goals even if their families and homes are targeted. Reacting to the Israeli crime, Hamas said that it was a desperate effort by the Nazi regime which has failed in the battlefield. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad condemned Israel's murder as an attempt to compensate for the regime's inability to achieve any of its goals in Gaza. Yemen's Ansarullah movement also said such sacrifices strengthen the steadfastness of Palestinians. Lebanon's Hezbollah said these sacrifices will lead to the victory of Gazans, the resistance fighters there, and the entire nation of Palestine. The Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine and Iraq's Islamic Resistance also condoled with Haniyeh. And more condolences reported from the Iranian president and foreign minister Ebrahim Raisi said that this crime further exposes the savage and child-killing nature of the Israeli regime. He emphasized Israel's criminal action demonstrates the regime's total disregard for all human and moral principles when it comes to saving itself from collapse and covering up for its defeat in the face of resistance. Raisi also slammed so-called human rights advocates, saying that they are all complicit in Israel's crimes because through their silence, they embolden the regime to repeat its criminal actions. Foreign Minister Hossein Emir Abdollahian, for his part, says such sacrifices will undoubtedly bolster the determination of Palestinians and their resistance and their request for the freedom of Palestine. He's added such criminal actions will also speed up the collapse and fall of the Zionist regime. And earlier in our news review program, we discussed in more depth Israel's violations of international law through the deliberate targeting of civilians, including family members of the resistance leaders and fighters. Now, welcome everyone to the News Review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. Joining us now for our News Review program is Charlotte Cates, international coordinator at the Samedun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network out of Vancouver, Canada, and Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist, joining us out of Bristol. Hello, I'd like to welcome you both to the program here. I guess we'll start with you, Charlotte, out there in Vancouver. Now, we've seen things over the last 6 or 7 months and arguably the last 75 years from the Israeli regime that we usually don't see in other conflicts, do we? I mean, out of the 34,000 people killed, 14,500 being children, 9,600 being women, all the hospitals targeted, all the elderly. I mean, and it's just... And then the attack we see on the Iranian embassy in Syria, one low blow after the other, and it just seems like there's no end to Israel as the ultimate low blower when it comes to crimes like this in the face of international law. Your initial thoughts?
Yes, the Zionist regime has consistently used assassinations as a mechanism of warfare against the Palestinian people and as a mechanism of genocide, because these assassinations are meant to deny the Palestinian people fundamentally their self-determination through assassinating leaders, through assassinating leaders' families. Right now what we're seeing is this is what the Zionist regime means by negotiating a ceasefire is killing the children and grandchildren of Ismail Haniyeh. And of course, this isn't restricted to Palestinians. As you mentioned, the notorious crime that the occupation regime just carried out last week in Syria, attacking the Iranian embassy and murdering people, including Iranian generals and leaders. This is a strategy that the Zionist regime uses in the belief that by engaging in these campaigns of terror, they'll be able to wipe out the resistance or take away the knowledge and leadership that the Palestinian people and the regional forces need in order to resist and win victory. But one thing has been clear throughout this entire history of decades and decades of assassinations and decades of criminal war crimes is that none of this has done anything to legitimize the Zionist conquest of Palestine, nor to crush or kill the Palestinian people and their resistance.
Thank you, Charlotte. Tony, welcome to the program. Now, Israel killing Haniyeh's children, his grandchildren. Help us understand it, Tony, the method to this madness, Israel's policy of using this level of terror against the sons and grandchildren of a Hamas leader. What point do they think that this makes?
Well, it's an incredibly cowardly act. It's the sort of thing you might expect from the school bully that picks on the younger brother, 3 or 4 years older than himself, of the person that is causing him trouble, and beats them up instead of the person because he doesn't have the courage to take on the one of his own age. But, you know, I think it was Napoleon Bonaparte that said history is just a lie that some important people agree on, because if you look at the track record of the Zionist cause, my program here in Bristol last week, we were looking at the assassination attempt on the British Foreign Secretary Ernest Bevin in the 1940s. He was actually from Bristol here, and he was the Foreign Secretary at the end of the war, Second World War, and the Israelis were shipping in explosives, as they were the Zionists at that time, before the beginning of the State of Israel, to actually drop onto the House of Commons, to blow up the House of Commons, and also to assassinate our Foreign Secretary, because the Foreign Secretary was not in agreement with the Israelis' methods in creating their own state in the 1940s. There was even revelations from MI5, Britain's Internal Security Service, that the Israelis intended to assassinate Winston Churchill after he, the famous British Prime Minister of World War II, after he criticised the methods of the Zionists in the 1940s. So this has been going back a long, long way, and I would have hoped that some of the British statesmen and other journalists in London, the mainstream media, would remember that these are the methods that these people have used. And the only reason that we're seeing these tens of thousands of deaths, I think, in Gaza, really is because we have a criminal nuclear-armed doomsday cult installed in Tel Aviv, who are now running the show. This Greater Israel project, and they realise that if they stop this war, if they have a ceasefire, that the political classes in Israel may well just simply overthrow them, get rid of people like Netanyahu, and put them in prison. And so they've painted themselves into a corner, that they've got to keep this war going, they've got to try to keep justifying it. And it really is an incredibly dangerous situation that they put themselves in. But ultimately, by killing the children of a leader that they can't reach because he's off the battlefield, is the most incredibly cowardly act that you ever like. And of course, ultimately, what this means is, even if they win this so-called war, that they can't win it because they've won it by such dastardly and cowardly means.
All right. Thank you both for joining us on the program. Stay safe to both of you. Cheryl Cates there joining us from Canada, and also Mr. Tony Gosling, investigative journalist, joining us out of Bristol. And this brings us to the conclusion of this segment, your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now. Welcome back, everyone. The Israeli regime continues with its campaign of abductions throughout the occupied Palestinian territories. And a new report says the regime's forces have abducted thousands of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank since the onset of its onslaught on Gaza. According to Palestinian Prisoners Society and the Commission of Detainees and Ex-Detainees, Israeli forces have abducted over 8,100 Palestinians since October the 7th. They added the Israeli occupation forces kidnapped some 20 Palestinians in the past day alone, majority of them hailing from the city of Tulkarm. Israel's arrest campaign in occupied territories has escalated in an unprecedented manner after the regime's genocidal war started. More than 400 plus Palestinians have been also killed by Israeli forces throughout the West Bank since then. On the first day of Eid al-Fitr holiday, Israeli forces raided several areas of the occupied West Bank. Our Ramallah correspondent, Mona Kandil, has your story.
The Israeli forces stormed areas from the north to the south, passing by the central of the occupied West Bank. The Israeli forces stormed the villages of Beit Imrin, West Nablus, an area between the villages of Tal and Surra, West Nablus. And also the Israeli forces raided Qabalan, South Nablus. In addition to these villages, Israeli forces stormed Asir al-Qibliya near Nablus, and exchange of fire have taken place there between the resistance groups, members of the resistance groups, and the Israeli soldiers. Despite the fact that no Palestinians were detained in the majority of these areas, however, the Israeli forces stormed the areas. They broke into a number of houses. They questioned people there, and as if the Palestinian experts are saying, it's a reminder. The Israeli forces continue to do their utmost to remind the Palestinians that they are still living under occupation. The Israeli forces has also stormed several areas and cities, towns, and villages in Al-Khalil. They broke into Izna, West Al-Khalil, Beit Umar, North Al-Khalil, as well as Bani Naim, East Al-Khalil, and a number of Palestinians has been detained in these areas.
On the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has met with the country's high-ranking officials and foreign ambassadors of Muslim countries in the Iranian capital. Reza Hashemi has your story.
From the river to the sea, what did Gaza really see? Unlike previous Ramadans, this year, the holy month was the bloodiest and most difficult of them all. And Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made sure to note that as he addressed a group of high-ranking officials and ambassadors of Muslim countries in Tehran, as he did earlier in the morning during the Eid al-Fitr prayer, expressing his disappointment at the hypocrisy of some Muslim leaders who are supporting Zionists. According to the leader, the government of some Muslim countries that are now supporting Zionists should cut ties with the regime, considering the fact that their people are infuriated with the Zionists. In the words of the leader, the oppressed people of Palestine have won the hearts of nations around the world, and people from Africa, Asia, Europe, and even the U.S. have turned out in great numbers taking part in pro-Palestine demonstrations, including the International Quds Day rallies. He also pointed to the extraordinary turnout of Iranians on this day. Reiterating what he had said in the Eid al-Fitr prayer in the morning, the leader described Gaza an issue of utmost importance that cannot be disregarded and said, "All of us should feel that we have a responsibility with regard to Gaza." It's been a very busy day for the leader of the Islamic Revolution. While he congratulated everyone on the special occasion, he also stressed on not forgetting the genocidal war taking place in Gaza. Reza Hashemi, Tehran.
millions of Muslims celebrated Eid al-Fitr worldwide, marking the end of the holy fasting month of Ramadan. This year's Ramadan came as Israel's war in Gaza continues unabated and has claimed more civilian lives even during the holy month. Fatima Masumi reports from the Iraqi city of Karbala.
Muslims around the world are celebrating Eid al-Fitr, which marks the conclusion of the holy month of Ramadan, the month of Allah, the month of the Holy Quran, and the month of prayer and piety. Muslims mark the Eid with mass prayers and gather together for special prayers and contribute financially to charitable causes. The celebration of the Eid emphasizes the values of spiritual upliftment, unity, and generosity towards those who are in need.
I came here to Karbala for Eid al-Fitr Salat, I mean the prayers of Eid al-Fitr. And what I witnessed was this beautiful solidarity among Muslims from different countries and cultures. For many people, Eid al-Fitr is more than a religious holiday, and it is a time for renewal and hope. And I think these days, not only Muslims, but also the whole world need this solidarity and fraternity, especially in the case of Gaza and the innocent children of Gaza.
The holy month of Ramadan holds immense significance in Islam and for Muslims worldwide. The month of fasting also marks the revelation of the Holy Quran to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. The birth of Imam Hassan, the second Shia Imam, also falls in this month. So does the martyrdom of Imam Ali, the first Shia Imam and the leader of the believers.
This year's Eid al-Fitr is simultaneous with an international uprising which is within our humanistic nature and value and has awakened many Muslim countries. The Israeli regime's atrocities are clear to all nations and religions and it is impossible to stay silent. The real Eid will be when the Palestinians are settled in peace in their own land and the Israeli regime is wiped out from the world and everyone is greeting each other for this victory.
This year's Eid al-Fitr came amid Israeli-U.S. genocidal war on Gaza. The incessant, devastating war continued to claim civilian lives even during the holy month, with fasting Palestinians losing their lives to Israeli atrocities and barbarism. Palestinians' plight in the war-torn Gaza is the most important issue of the Muslim world today. The war has dehumanized the entire Palestinian population in Gaza and decimated the life there. The Palestinians have sacrificed everything that was dear to them, their children, spouses, mothers, fathers, and their homes, but remain committed to their faith and their resistance to the Israeli occupation.
The holy month of Ramadan was not just about fasting, but also about Muslim unity, in particular against injustice. This month, we sympathize with Palestinians in the war-torn Gaza and express solidarity with our brothers and sisters who are enduring the most savage crimes seen in modern history. Fatima Masumi, Karbala.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Soul of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
Tel Aviv is coming up against myriad obstacles, from the loss of Western public opinion to the nervousness of its key backers. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned, please. Middle East Eye wrote, "For 75 years, the Western world was indifferent. But this war is forcing the Zionist regime's Western backers to see the full horrors of the crimes being committed in a campaign they described 5 months ago as just. Even a progressive critic of the Zionist regime like U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders said 5 months ago that the war against resistance group Hamas was just. The degree of brutality and glee shown by the Zionist regime troops as they go on their daily killing sprees, starving Gaza and then dropping leaflets in Arabic telling Palestinians to feed the needy, killing 400 people waiting for aid and then vowing to flood Gaza with aid, all of this is too much to sweep under the carpet when this war stops. A Rubicon has been crossed. With this war, the Zionist regime has entered the elite rank of pariah states. It is now the ugliest of the ugly. It's impossible to forgive. It cannot be justified, nor can it be put into context. The entire operation in Gaza is an atrocity. Liberal Zionism has become a contradiction in terms. It's too much of a strait. Acting like this, the Zionist regime has become not the home of a beleaguered people persecuted around the world for millennia, but the Fort Knox of Jewish supremacism, the natural heir to white supremacists. This is having a transformational effect on Jewish people worldwide, in whose name and common past these crimes are being committed." The short cri du coeur of Jonathan Glazer, the British director of the Zone of Interest, did not come out of the blue when he said during his Oscar acceptance speech, "We stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people." The same cry of "not in my name" is coming from the thousands of young Jews who are marching every weekend in London to stop the war in Gaza. Emily, a Jewish activist with the group Na'mud UK, recently said, "I think there has been a quiet reckoning in our community, and you can see this because the bloc keeps growing, the movement keeps growing, the constituency organizations keep getting bigger and bigger. I have never been so sure that I will see a free Palestine." Asked what she thought of her government's attempts to brand these marches as the work of extremists, she said, "I'm very tired of being told how to feel as a Jewish person by people who are not Jewish. I'm tired of being told to feel afraid when these marches are, by and large, peaceful. And people are so lovely to us and so thankful to us. It really shows the ignorance of Jewish opinion outside of their very small Zionist rabble." This is where real leadership is coming from. It's on the streets, not parliament. These are the lions. The political leaders are the donkeys, she said. The Zionist regime and its apologies are right to be scared of what a new generation of American and British Jews are telling them. For the last 8 decades, the child killer regime of Israel governed a consensus about its existence, identity, and purpose that was more powerful than all the arms, money, and Jewish migrants it received. The weaker this consensus becomes, the quicker the Zionist regime will lose its influence in the centers of Western powers. Already, the compulsive addiction of support for the Zionist regime is upending the West's own attempts to explain to itself that it is a moral force, a force for good in the world. Under the British government's latest definition of extremism, it is right to support a government that flouts the Genocide Convention, starves a population under occupation, and kills unarmed mothers and children at will, but extremists to protest against that on the streets of London. This is a patent absurdity. It is left to the likes of South Africa to show Britain the way. It is now going to prosecute its citizens who return after fighting for the Zionist regime's army. It will take time to erode, but after what has happened in Gaza, the future will surely not guarantee the hold the Zionist regime has over every major Western political party. It will not be able to dictate the definition of anti-Semitism, nor will it guarantee the funds that aspiring Western politicians need. Today, every Tory and Labour politician with ambitions for the top job must, almost by definition, be a friend of Israel, a club that maintains a stronghold on each parliamentary party. That might not be true for the next generation of politicians. Jewish academic opposition to the fabricated regime of Israel is strong and vocal. It cannot accurately be called fringe. The child killer regime of Israel is now starting to lose the global Jewish voice. Netanyahu's weakness is having a profound effect on the Western political elites who supported and armed the Zionist regime. U.S. President Joe Biden's rift with Netanyahu is now open and in the public eye. The U.S. leader, who said so loudly that Israel had every right to defend itself 5 months ago, now says Israel cannot kill another 30,000 Palestinians in the name of self-defense. We don't believe Biden has had some dramatic change of heart or that the scales have fallen from his eyes. U.S. government officials are fully informed about what is happening on the ground in Gaza at every stage of his operation. They knew, for instance, that resistance groups were not diverting aid convoys or stealing food, and said so. If Biden is confronting the consequences of having given the Zionist regime the brightest of green lights to invade Gaza after the October 7th events, those consequences are primarily electoral. Biden's team has been shocked by the extent of uncommitted vote. Hundreds of thousands of voters across the U.S. voted for no candidate in the Democratic primaries on Super Tuesday, as the movement urging voters to vote uncommitted gathers pace in protest against Biden's handling of the war in Gaza. This could cost him in the general election in November. Biden's Ramadan greetings were especially warm this year, but Arab Americans don't want hugs. They want a change of policy, and Biden still only supports a temporary ceasefire, not a permanent one. He has not threatened to stop the supply of weapons to Israel. Nevertheless, there has been a deliberate shift in tone. The Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the highest-ranking Jewish official in the U.S., was full-throated in his support for the Zionist regime after the October 7th events. Recently, he warned the Zionist regime it cannot survive if it becomes a global pariah. Schumer accused Netanyahu of putting political survival above national interest and said he had been too willing to tolerate the civilian toll in Gaza, which is pushing support for the Zionist regime worldwide to historic lows. Israel cannot survive if it becomes a pariah, he said. The loss of public opinion in the West, the continuing genocide case at the International Court of Justice, the erosion of Jewish consensus, and the nervousness of the Zionist regime's backers, all of these elements point to a strategic defeat for the child killer regime of Israel. Even if the war stops now, the price the Israeli regime has paid for the reoccupation of Gaza will be higher than it could have possibly calculated 5 months ago, but it has yet to realize this. It will.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio, old ladies from all around the world. Welcome back to your own program, Muslim Lady. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host once again. Yes, welcome to your own program. As usual, we're going to talk about the issues that are related to all the women out there. And in today's episode, we have Sister Nahid with us to help us with the topics. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome.
Assalamu alaikum to you and all your dear listeners. I'm so glad and pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you very much for being here. How are you doing?
Good. Everything is going okay.
So that's perfect. I remember when I was younger, I was too passionate about every single thing that happened around me. Like, I'm so emotional of a person, and my feelings are the things that are simmering all the time. Like, if I see a butterfly, if I see a ladybird, if I see a blooming flower, if I see every single detail in nature, in life that is beautiful, the beautiful details I'm talking about, not the very sad detail. Everything makes me have too much of emotion, and it makes me so emotional. But then as I grew older, I understood that in life, in the real life, in which there are a lot of other human beings living around you, you should not be so openly emotional. Sometimes you have to just control it, even if you are feeling it too passionately. Like, as in, when you get in different situations, when you are left to make a decision between two roads, and you take one road, not the other road, and then you come to think about why I did take this road, not that road. This was emotional, but that was logical. Is it good to be logical, or is it good to be emotional?
Yeah, to start with this question, you know, first we're talking about gears, and gears with their own nature, with their own instinct, with their own mentality, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that we need to know as well is that gears are created emotional, like even in Islam.
It's in their nature, actually.
Yeah, exactly. And even in Islam, it is clear. Like,
yeah,
they have mentioned that it's okay for you to have a heart that is sometimes super sensitive to
that
issues.
That is beating so hard.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just getting super sensitive. We have seen girls, like sometimes, as you mentioned, crying for, I don't know, for a very small issue.
Exactly. They watch a movie and then they cry.
Yeah.
And then the other people would poke jokes at them.
Not the other people, the other gender, we can say.
Yeah.
Girls can understand each other, you know?
Yeah.
And it's okay. I mean, the first thing that we need to know is that it's okay for girls to be emotional. And we should recognize our own body, our own brain, our own heart at the same time. Like, we should know that as a girl, I'm sometimes so much sensitive, and it's okay for me. But to answer the question directly, which was, is it better to be, like, logical or emotional? if I want to just like answer in an ideal way, I'm gonna say no. You're gonna be logical.
You have to be logical.
Exactly. You should be logical all the time. Mm-hmm. Who said your emotions are gonna decide for
so
you?
So where can I take my heart?
Yeah. What I'm gonna say is that in the real world, when we get back to reality, this will never happen. Like, how can a girl stop her emotions and just
ignore their emotions?
Yeah,
it's impossible.
Even for boys, it's not possible.
Yeah.
We're not gonna say that the boys are just like stones; they can't feel anything. Even for them, it's
exactly.
not possible.
Exactly. It's see, heart is a thing that has been put in girls and boys. Both of them have got a heart, so it's wrong to say that it's just for girls. No, but we're talking to ladies. That's why we are just highlighting them. So keep it at this point and remember what you're going to say. Let's go for a short break and then we'd come back to pursue our discussion. Welcome back, Muslim ladies, to your own program. Well, we're talking about our emotions and how to make a balance between emotion and logic. You must figure out how emotional you are and then make a balance between your emotion and your logic. Because as for me, like I know that I'm an emotional person, excessively emotional. So what happens is that I come to embrace the reality and then given the chance to be put in such emotional roads and journeys, I would just tell to myself many times that you are an emotional person. Try not to get so overly engaged with everything. I keep repeating that to myself in order to bring myself back to reality. Like to make sure that there's a logic behind what I do, though I'm an emotional person.
Yeah, that really works. Like acknowledging your own state of mind, a state of heart even, and your ideas.
Yeah.
You know, surely we need the balance, we need the moderation to control ourselves in the emotional or the even logical situation. Sometimes you shouldn't be that much logical.
Exactly.
Like, imagine something, God forbidden, imagine something bad has happened, and then if you want to be logical, you're going to just stay and stare at the person who is, I don't know, in trouble, for example.
Yeah.
Sometimes we need our emotions, and it's okay. It's even good in some situations to be logical.
See, it's a faculty, an ability, I don't know, a skill, something potential in you that is going to help you so much. It's nothing to harm you, but if you let this wild horse ride so wildly, then that's going to be dangerous. But if you try to learn how to rein it in, how to control it, then it's going to work for your benefit. And it's going to be a blessing.
Exactly. And that's why women like men in Islam are encouraged to use their intellect and reasoning abilities, like logic, in making decisions and navigating life's challenges. Like women are also advised to keep into consideration that they need to be reasonable, they need to be logical, while they are recognized with their emotional status as well. Like, it is clear that they can act emotionally, but they need to think well, they need to consider the situations, then decide.
Have a double thinking.
Exactly.
So, also in Islamic heritage and in the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, we have a lot of quotations and a lot of narrations that address women as flowers, delicate flowers. With this analogy, everything is actually clear that women are such delicate creatures that they have to take care of their own delicacy, like their own sensibility and all their senses, and there must be a balance between their logic and their emotion. Not that emotion is a bad thing, no. On the contrary, I just said that they always address women as flowers, like these delicate creatures. So it makes it perfectly clear that our emotion is our weapon, actually, but we have to use it in a logical way.
Exactly. You know, even in the Quran, Allah has referred to the heart of people as a processor of information, particularly concerning the emotions, which attracts the attention to the relationship between the mind and the heart. Exactly. Like the heart is playing this big role in our even everyday life. And that is... Even in Quran, it is mentioned that our heart is the source of fitra, the source of the feelings that we can get from God.
The intuitions that we get are coming from our heart directly.
And we have even Allah himself, like with clear pictures, with clear vision.
Exactly.
We have God himself in our heart as well. Yeah. That's why it's kind of sometimes leading our life.
Yeah, but the fact is, just as we were just talking about it, the fact is to keep it in moderation.
Yes.
Like, try to watch it out. Do not let it go so wildly, because then that would affect you or maybe harm you. Just now we got into this point, I would like to know, what are the occasions in which we as women, as Muslim ladies, have to control our emotions, like try to be much more logical? What kind of occasions are there for us to control our emotion that is going to be blissful for us to be much more logical? But before that, we have to go for a break and then come back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
So, coming back to the question I had before the break, by the way, you're listening to Muslim Ladies, your own program. Welcome back, all the ladies who are listening to us, and thank you for staying with us until this very last part of today's episode. Coming back to that question, have you ever said to yourself that from now on, in this occasion, you just stay logical?
Yeah,
you forget about your emotions.
Yeah,
you turn it off, and then you become logical.
I guess all girls have thought about this a thousand times, even every day.
On a daily basis.
Yeah. But, you know, to answer this question, to go through the occasions at which we need to control ourselves, I'm going to continue. Do you remember the Quranic quote that I had in the previous part, which was about the heart being the processor of information, the heart being the place, the source of
the center of intuition.
Yeah, I'm going to just continue that. And I guess the rest of that verse is going to answer our questions as well. It is mentioned that, heart is the place that our fitra comes from. But when this heart becomes ill with greed, jealousy, hatred, ego, and temptations, it loses its fitra. You know, I guess the things that are sometimes threatening our heart, threatening our emotions, are these cases. Like, women sometimes act based on their ego, sometimes jealousy, sometimes greed. In different situations, based on these kinds of feelings, we start to overact. We start to lose our control.
Yeah, in their judgments, even,
yeah,
I would
exactly.
say. I guess if we just forget about our emotion in some occasions in which we have to give analysis about other people, like in which we have, just imagine you as a successful lady who is running a business. Just imagine if somebody comes to you and you do not turn off your emotion and then you hate that person, what would happen to you? Of course you would just reject them. Just because, personally, you hate that person.
Yeah, it's my feeling, but I'm going to control it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to act based on it.
No, I have to say that us as women, we have this powerful and a strong intuition inside of us that when there's an impulse that tells us something is wrong, most of always something is wrong.
Yeah.
Really, something is wrong. But then again, just try to keep this as a side note to yourself and do not act according to it. That's what I would say.
Yeah, exactly. And women are, I guess, the best critical thinkers.
Exactly.
They can analyze each situation pretty well. They can act accordingly very well. And they can even control their emotions. But there are some very we can say even rare moments that we explode. Like we cannot control that emotion.
The volcano.
These situations can be controlled by the knowledge, by the information, by our use of power. You know,
we and it's are a skill, powerful. You know, you have to learn it by time.
Yeah, we need to be trained over this. We need to have the information, practice it a lot, and then come to one point at which we say, I can control myself even in this situation.
Yeah. I'm too emotional, but I'm strong enough to handle it.
Yes, and this is the very moment that we see ourselves in our true self, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The one that is not being affected neither by emotions and nor by any negative feelings or negative thoughts.
Yeah, but then, again, I have to say this point that without emotions of these ladies, then there would have never been such a thing, such a word as mother. Like, this word connotes to many feelings, to many other words. Like, it starts to look like a dictionary. Like, the word mother itself can lead you to many other words, like kindness, passion, sacrifice. Like, every beautiful concept that you could ever see in this world comes from these motherly passions that we all have experienced in our
definitely.
Lives. So emotions are, I guess, the center and the source of a strength for women, but the only thing that they have to do is to know how to make use of it, is to know how to control it and how to overcome this overreacting, as you just mentioned, and to just rein it in. This was all. Thank you, Sister Nahid.
My pleasure.
And thank you, dear listeners. Until another session, I leave you to God's never sleeping eyes. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I'm waiting for something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
عید الفطر In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. Today is the day of عید الفطر, the great feast marking the end of fasting of the blessed month of Ramadan. Eid al-Fitr is among the three great feasts of Muslims and is held with special religious ceremonies and rituals in all Muslim countries and among Muslims of non-Muslim countries. It is the first day of the Islamic month of Shawwal. Fasting is haram or religiously forbidden on this day, while paying of a special alms called Zakat Fitr is obligatory. This is an official holiday in most Islamic countries, and Muslims hold the glorious Fitr congregational prayers on this day. Eid al-Fitr, like all other feasts in Islam, is away from revelry and sinful deeds. This is the characteristic of the faithful, which God says in part of Ayah 55 of Surah Qisas of the Noble Quran, "When they hear vain talk, they avoid it." We have prepared a two-part program on this occasion. Here is the first part. In Islam, every behavior and word should have a constructive purpose. That's why the faithful shun any futile thought, word, and deed. It has been narrated that the second infallible successor of the Prophet of Islam, Imam Hassan, peace upon him, came across a group of people who were engaged in play and diversion. The Imam told his companions, "Indeed, God the Exalted made the month of Ramadan as a field of competition for His servants so that they take lead towards obedience of Allah and pleasing Him." Thus, a group took the lead and won, while another group disobeyed and fell behind. It is very amazing for those who are engaged in play and futile affairs in the day when the righteous receive rewards and the sinners lose. The faithful raised their hands to the sky and whispered the supplication of Imam Sajjad, the fourth infallible successor of the Prophet, saying, "O Allah, we repent for any sin that we have committed, or any evil deed that we have sent ahead, or any bad thought that we have planted in the heart." The penitence of a person who does not intend to return in his heart to the sin, a pure penitence that is devoid of doubt. So accept it from us and make us steadfast on it. Veneration of Allah's sacraments is among the features of Eid al-Fitr. Reciting of Allahu Akbar, meaning God is the greatest, and praising and celebrating Allah's glory are among the rites of this day. Principally, religious slogans manifest the beauty of Islam and unity and power of Muslims to the world. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, said, "Adorn your feast with Allahu Akbar." Elsewhere, he said, "Adorn your Eid al-Fitr and Eid al-Adha with La ilaha illallah. There is no God but Allah. Allahu Akbar, God is the greatest. Alhamdulillah, all praises belong to Allah, and Subhanallah, clear is God." The great noted Muslim scholar Sheikh Mufid, who lived some 1,000 years ago, writes that the first day of the month of Shawwal has been ordained as the Feast of the Faithful is because they are happy with acceptance of their deeds in the month of Ramadan, since Almighty God has forgiven their sins, covered their defects, and good news has come from God that many rewards will be granted to those who were fasting. The faithful are rejoicing as they have gone a few phases closer to God with efforts on nights and days of the blessed month of Ramadan. Ghusl, ritual washing of body has been ordained on this day, and this is a thing of cleaning from sins. Wearing perfume, beautiful and clean clothes, going to the open space and praying under the sky are all things of happiness and joy and have been ordained out of wisdom. As a matter of fact, the blessed month of Ramadan ends with a happy occasion which gladdens the faithful. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, "When the crescent of moon appears, cry of the angels is raised, saying, 'O the faithful, come and receive your rewards.'" Then Imam Ali, peace upon him, continues, "Know that the most immediate thing that has been ordained for the men and women who fast is that on the last day of the month of Ramadan, an angel cries out on behalf of Allah, 'O servants of Allah, good news for you, as Allah has forgiven your sins. So think on your future, a new life to see how you will live.'" Dear listeners, the end of Ramadan and Eid al-Fitr is the beginning of a new life. So a faithful should be different from the days before Ramadan. Fasting has made him familiar with the pain and suffering of the poor and the miserable. Thus, he pays the zakat, special alms for Eid al-Fitr, before the Eid congregational prayer. Zakat cleans both the individual and the society. It causes the seeds of virtues to grow both in the individual and the society. In other words, zakat washes pollutions on the one hand and causes perfection on the other hand. Eid al-Fitr is in fact the day of relief from darkness which has overwhelmed us due to our sins. This day is the time of returning to the divine nature. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, "When you go out of your homes for Eid prayer, remember the time when you will exit your body and go to Allah. When you stand in the place of prayer, remember the time when you will stand in the divine presence and you will be reckoned. When you return home from prayer, remember the time when you go to your home in paradise." The convergence of Muslims in Eid al-Fitr prayer is a manifestation of the power of Islam and glory of Muslims. It shows unity of Muslims. This will help keep Islam alive. As we read in the Qunut, supplicating in prayer with hands open in front of the face, this Eid is the day of magnanimity and treasure for the Prophet. In this supplication, we also ask God to admit us in every good thing that He has admitted the Prophet and his progeny, and take us out of every evil that He has taken them out. Congratulations on Eid al-Fitr.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. this is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli occupation forces killed over 120 Palestinians in 24 hours as a death toll for Jenin's campaign of genocide.